quick question survey. I'd like to know who's in the room. If you were born in the 2000s, will you raise your hand? That's cute. If you were born in the 1900s, raise your hand. That's what I'm talking about. I'd just like to know who's in the room. 1800s, anybody? Right there. It's nice to have you here today. I'm just kidding. That'd be weird, wouldn't it? It'd be awesome. But any 80s kids, like strictly the 80s? Best decade ever. You're my favorite people in the room. Before I do that, here's a quick fact that I thought about probably 2 days ago, that the year 2050 is closer than the year 1985. How does that feel? Terrible, right? Feels kind of weird to me. But back in the 1980s, mid-1980s, my dad bought a house about 7 miles out of town in a small town called Hamilton, Missouri. And if you know the name JCPenney, JCPenney was born here. Who's heard of JCPenney before? I'm proud of you guys. There's nobody in the front half of the church that heard of JCPenney before. They were pre-Amazon magazine. Wait 2 weeks to get it. It was great. But he was born there, and my dad bought this two-story, three-bedroom home, and this house sat on 6 acres on top of a hill you could see for miles, and he only paid $10,000 for it. It was amazing. It was also abandoned, but we bought it and lived there. And on this, I'll just call it a farm, we had all sorts of animals. We had chickens, we had horses, we had a goat named Bud and a dog named Bo. To this day, don't know where they went. They just kind of disappeared one day. And we had some cats, and we had my sister. And then most summer days, I'd wake up, go downstairs, and my mom would point out the door and say one word that rhymes with outside. And so I'd immediately head outside for the day. And I spent my entire childhood outside. Sunny day, outside. Rainy day, outside. Healthy, outside. Chicken pox, outside. And go rub on your sister, too, because we need to get this whole thing moving through the body and get that thing done quick. Everybody remember that? Kids in the front row, what is chicken pox? We don't even know. And it seemed like we had tons of land to explore. And on that land was a pond. And in that pond were some crawdads. And on those crawdads were some pinchers, real nice pinchers. And they hurt. But other than that, I loved to explore that land. And every night I knew it was time to come back inside because it was before dark. There'd be just a little bit of blue in the sky, and I'm like, is it before dark? Is it dark yet? Couldn't really tell. But I knew when it was time to go in or if I was too late because them coyotes would start barking. And let me tell you, I've never seen one of those things, but those things are scary, and they can make you run home fast. And so I would. And on this land, out in the country, this house, my friend lived about 5 miles away. If you took the gravel road to the dirt road to the highway to another gravel road, made a big square, or shorter if you took the horse. So I'd cut straight through. And so most summer days I'd wake up, I'd go outside like a good boy, go to the field, hunt down the horse, jump on its back, and ride all the way to my friend's house through the back fields. And it took about an hour. But actually, who really knows how long it took? Because back then, time did not exist. But I loved the ride there. I'd ride up that dirt road, through the gate, and down on my left-hand side, there'd be a tree line. I'd ride along the tree line, super slow. And then to my right, there were some bean fields, and then eventually turn into cornfields. But after the bean fields would turn into the cornfields would turn into this like open prairie land that had like these tall like wheat-looking things with the squiggly thing on the end. You know, you put it in your mouth, and you're like, I'm a farmer, right? That's what that thing reminds me of. I love those things. I love that part. I love the tall grass. It kind of looked like this. I did some Googling, and kind of looked like this picture here on the screen. This is what I experienced almost every day of my life when I was a child. It was awesome. And about a quarter mile before getting to my friend's farmland, there was a creek, or a crick, if you're weird. And so we'd get to the creek, I'd get off the horse, and I'd just lay down on the ground. And sometimes I'd lean up against a tree, but not usually, because them ants would get you. And most times I'd lay on my back and I'd feel the warmth of the sunshine on my face. And I'd just listen to the breeze run through all of nature's elements. The birds, the crickets, all the living things that exists. And I'd lay there. And I'd think about the earth. And I'd think about heaven, about how big God was. And I'd think about what Jesus was like. How long was eternity? Is it really forever? I think about what I wanted to be when I grew up. I wasn't in a rush, wasn't in a hurry, because I didn't have anywhere to be. And the whole time, the horse just kind of sitting over there, not really sitting, that horses don't sit, that's kind of weird. But it would be standing over there just waiting, eating, making horse noises. And I wish I could go back to those moments and relive them again. The days seem longer, seem to be more space, didn't have any obligations because when you're a kid, you don't have anything to do or be or anything. Didn't have the internet, no cell phones, what do I do with my hands? No texting, no emails waiting for you when you wake up in the morning. You actually had to sit down and write letters to each other and wait 2 weeks to get a return. No Spotify, no YouTube, no Snap, no Facebook, no Instagram, no TikTok to ruin the world, no Amazon. Oh, gosh. Heart attack. Didn't have much stuff, but seemed to have everything that we needed. No distractions. Everything seemed just so much quieter. And slower and simple. And in many ways, we had no choice but to be present and in the moment. There was so much time. And when I think about those days, I begin to feel this aching deep down inside of me, down into like the core of me. And sometimes it almost feels like a grief. And I often think, would it be possible to live like that again? Nope, we can't. It's gone. Those days are over. Those are good days, but gone. If you were just joining us today, we are in our third week of a series called Unhurried, and we are confronting a reality that most of us can probably recognize but rarely admit to, is that we are in a hurry. And although we often like to confuse the two, there's a difference between busyness and hurry. They're not the same thing. Busyness is an outward condition. It simply means I have a lot to do. And by itself, busyness is not bad or unhealthy when it is stewarded well. Depending on your stage of life, busyness is often unavoidable. Hurry, on the other hand, is an inward condition. And we've defined this as an inward state of excessive haste that leaves us unable to be present with God and others. Now, I kind of like that word haste because we never use that in our vocabulary. When's the last time you ever said the word haste? Probably not this week. It kind of makes me think like, make haste. Kids wake up, make haste, make haste. If they're like, we're not in Europe. Like, this is like, I think, or England maybe. It's England, I don't know. Who talks like that? This is United States. We say hurry, not make haste. Well, hurry, here's the definition of hurry. Hurry is having too much to do and not enough time to do it. It's like speed driven by anxiety rather than purpose. Living as though life is always slipping away. And I have a son named Solomon. He's 15. He'll often ask me, hey, Dad, are you busy tonight? Are you busy this weekend? And what he's saying is, do you already have something that you have to do? Now, my daughter, on the other hand, she likes to follow me around and say, Dad, you seem like you're in a hurry. And what she means is, Dad, something seems wrong with your time, and I can tell that it's affecting you. Which leads me to wonder, have you ever wondered where hurry comes from in the first place? Because it's not like we just wake up one day and decide, I'm going to live today in a hurry. Who does that? It just kind of happens. And when I lived on that farm, back with the horse, I was never in a hurry. I think sometimes my parents wish I was, but I wasn't, just not in a hurry. But now it seems as though I'm constantly fighting against it, Even this week, I can feel the hurry. Got to get this done. Got to write this sermon, right? I can feel it. But when hurry becomes the default posture of our life, it will lead to something called hurry sickness. It's a real thing. And this can be summed up as an illness in which a person feels chronically short on time and so tends to perform every task faster and gets flustered when encountering any kind of delay. Hence Annie's comment, I get flustered. Dad, are you in a hurry? Yes, I am. And how do we know when we've hit this default posture in life? Well, borrow my daughter for a week and she will tell you. Here are some of the symptoms of hurry sickness that we've referenced every week, and maybe you've seen this already, maybe this is your first time seeing this list, but I have a question for you. Whether or not you've seen this, how many of you have been scoring 100%? I'm kind of getting there myself. Thank you for your honesty. Could it be, let me ask you this other question, could it be that there's actually a progression to this list? I'd probably put number 9 up on the top, but could it be that there's a progression? Not saying there is, but I've been there. I know what these things look like. Let's be honest with ourselves for just a moment. I bet we can all relate to something on that list, and the more that you're on that list, the more that maybe you're living life in a hurry. But we'd also probably say that we don't want to stay there. And here's the great news. Jesus doesn't want you to stay there either. Jesus said in John chapter 10, verse 10, he says, I came so that you may have life and life to the full. Not run on empty, not waiting for the world to end. But as we've been discussing over the last couple weeks, to experience life to the full, we have to ruthlessly eliminate hurry from our life. And if you need to catch up on the last 2 weeks of the series, you can do that online on the app. I encourage you to do so. But in this series, we've been discussing three practices that are central to eliminating or removing hurry from your life. And I would say that these are non-negotiable. And they're not easy either. But there's purpose behind each one. And so last week, we started with practice number 1, which is solitude. And last week, we defined solitude as intentionally creating quiet, distraction-free time and space to nourish your soul and connect with God. Now, why is this a practice? Well, because it takes practice. You're not just good at it. But as you practice, you will get better and better, and it will get better and better. But this week, I would like to add a little bit more to this definition because I can, because I'm on stage. Not Andy, he taught this last week. Just kidding. Anyway, laugh. Okay, thank you. Just kidding. Here's what I would say, what I'd like to add to this definition. The intentional practice of creating distraction-free time and space to quiet the noise, connect with God, and nourish your soul. Now, why the addition? Well, while external noise is often easy to escape, the deeper challenge lies in the internal noise going on inside us. The constant swirl of thoughts, the pressures, the worries, the rumination of what if. I'm talking about the noise that follows us everywhere because it's actually within us. And without solitude, that internal noise remains unaddressed. And solitude slows us down enough to notice what's happening deep down inside of our innermost being. And solitude leads us to becoming attentive to God's presence so that way we can hear his voice, receive his love, and be in his presence so he can speak truth to our life. Solitude is not simply isolation. It's not isolation at all or escape from responsibility, but a necessary rhythm that allows our souls to settle, allows them to breathe, to reflect, and to grow in our relationship with him, letting him minister to that internal noise so that we can be at peace. It's non-negotiable. I'd like to talk about the second practice, to eliminating hurry from our lives. That is simplicity. Now, to begin unpacking this practice, I want to take a look at a passage of Scripture from the book of Matthew. And if you're not familiar with the Bible, the book of Matthew, this would be about a little bit past the second half of the New Testament. It's the first book of what's called the four Gospels. But up to this point, Jesus has been spending time with people, healing the sick, correcting religious leaders, teaching people a bunch of stuff and things. And he then introduces something called the parable of the soils. And to explain why, he does this to explain why the same message of the kingdom results in radically different responses in people depending on the condition of their heart. And so there's so much to this passage that we will not unpack today, but for the sake of today, let's look at this together. Verse 1. That same day, Jesus went out to the house and sat by the lake. That sounds glorious to me. And such large crowds gathered around him that he got into a boat and sat in it, while all the people stood on the shore. Now, if you get seasick or don't like people, this may not be so great. Then he told them many things in parables, saying, a farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow. Kind of sounds like my backyard. Bumpy and shallow, can't grow grass. Too many maple leaves. Please come chop that tree down. But when the sun came up, the plants were scorched. I don't know, maybe it's Arizona he's talking about. And when they withered because they had no root. Now, I won't give you any hints, but you might want to pay attention to this next sentence. Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. Everybody say choked. Thank you. Say choked again.
Choked.
Say choked.
Choked.
Oh, shh. Choked.
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 You guys are not, you're not. Choked.
Choked.
Everybody.
Choked.
Okay. It's not on my notes. It happens. But I want you to remember that word. That's why we did that, okay? Teacher secret. Still other seed fell on good soil where it produced a crop, 160 or 30 times what was sown. Now after this parable, the disciples asked Jesus why he spoke in parables. And that's a funny word anyway. And he explained that parables reveal truth to receptive hearts but remain hidden to hardened ones. And then he affirmed that they were blessed to understand what others could not. And then Jesus goes on to explain this parable. He says, listen then to what the parable of the sower means. When anyone hears the message about the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what was sown in their heart. This is the seed sown along the path. Okay. The second seed is falling on rocky ground, refers to someone who hears the word and at once receives it with joy. But since they have no root, they last only a short time. When the trouble or persecution comes because of the word, they quickly fall away. That's no good. Here comes another hint. The seed falling among the thorns refers to someone who hears the word, but the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth choke the word, making it unfruitful. Now let's define some words here just for a moment. In the original Greek, the words, the worries of this life, literally mean cares or anxieties of this life. And if you continue to break down this word and you go even deeper, you'll find something called distractions. And these thorns that Jesus is referring to are the cares, anxieties, and distractions of this world. But wait, there's more. And the deceitfulness of wealth. Now, deceitfulness, you break that word down, look up the original meaning, means delusions. And wealth means not just money, but also possessions and abundance. And so the cares, the anxieties, the distractions in this life, and the delusion of money, possessions, and abundance choke the word, Choke meaning to crowd, to drown, or to strangle completely, making it unfruitful. A reminder, Jesus is talking about people here. Making it unfruitful. Unfruitful meaning barren, not yielding what it should yield. Destitute of good deeds, contributing nothing to the instruction or improvement or comfort of others. And so let's put all of that together so we can enjoy it together on screen. The seed falling among the thorns refers to someone who hears the word, but the cares of this life, the anxieties of this life, and the distractions of this life, and the delusions of money, possessions, and abundance crowd and completely strangle the word, making that person destitute of good deeds and contributing nothing to the instruction, improvement, or comfort of others. Now, how does that sound? Question for you. Might you have any thorns in your life? And then Jesus finishes the parable and he says, but the seed falling on good soil refers to someone who hears the word, understands it. This is the one who produces a crop yielding 100, 60, or 30 times what was sown. And Jesus is describing someone who has his or her heart and life in order. Now, we live in a culture where more is celebrated, especially West Omaha. More things, more money, more followers, more experiences, more opportunities. It's weird because from the time that we are young, we're generally taught that more is better. More equals happiness, and more equals fulfillment. And if one activity is good, adding another must be better. If we're doing it well, we should do more. More striving, more success, more influence, more responsibilities. And if our calendar is full, we must be important. More meetings, more obligations. And if we're busy, we must be doing something right. More productivity, more commitments. If there's space in our lives, you gotta fill it. More stuff, more obligations, more possessions. And what's curious about this, and probably true for all of us, is that most of what we add isn't bad. But over time, it's the accumulation of these things that begin to cause crowding. The activities, the obligations, commitments, possessions, the things that we say yes to, the things that we feel obligated to say yes to. Know what I'm talking about there? These things begin to clutter and crowd and begin the choking, making it difficult to live a full and fruitful life. And we feel it. We feel it. And we feel it. But what do? Well, we got to keep up. So we just keep adding. We just keep accumulating. We just keep overcommitting. And let the strangling begin. You know, technology is funny. I do laugh sometimes at night looking at technology because it brings funniness into my life. But it's funny because it's promised convenience and more time, but instead it's created an even bigger problem. More comparison. And more comparison leads to more consumption. And as we accumulate more, manage more, and chase more, hurry becomes our normal. Why? Because those things need our attention. And those things cost time. And those things cost margin. And margin is a valuable commodity. Let me ask you another question. Just in 5 seconds, evaluate your entire life. Do you have margin? If you're not sure, I would say that the way that you feel would give you the answer. Because lack of margin fuels hurry. And I am also personally feeling this in my life right now. Just the other day, I had to write out every week of my life for the next 6 months to make sure that I stayed on track with everything that I am responsible for. Did not feel good. I know what to do about it. Starting to do stuff about it. But let's get back to practice number two, simplicity. I want to be really clear on what we mean by simplicity, because simplicity is often misunderstood. Here's what simplicity is not. Simplicity is not minimalism as like a lifestyle or a trend. And simplicity is not just about owning less for the sake of owning less. And it's not about rejecting responsibility or productivity, because God is not calling us to withdraw from life. He's inviting us to live life well. And so we can define simplicity as the intentional practice of arranging our lives around what matters most and removing what competes with it. It's about being ultra protective of what we give our time, our attention, our energy, and our devotion to. Choosing fewer things so that we can give ourselves more fully to the things that matter. And in a world that constantly tells us to add more, simplicity starts to push back against the soil-draining lie that more will make us happier. And simplicity calls us to choose less and invites us to remove more, not to shrink our lives or become self-focused, but to create margin, not out of guilt, but out of wisdom, so that we can live our life not marked by anxiety and unhealthy urgency, but with peace-filled intentionality. The pursuit of more quietly leads us into a life of hurry. This is why pursuing simplicity matters. Instead of asking the question, well, how much can I add? How much can I fit? Simplicity says, hold on. What actually matters? What is actually life-giving? What is essential here? Do you actually need that? What do I need to let go of that's keeping me from being present with God and present with others? Is there anything that is choking out my heart? Can I breathe? Simplicity creates margin, and margin breathes life into your soul. Now, I'd like to take a quick detour here for just a moment before we come in for a landing and just talk about your soul. The soul is the life-giving breath within a person, the living self that was created by God. Now, Jimmy, what do you mean by that? Well, the writers of Scripture tell us that when God formed humanity, he breathed the breath of life into Adam, and that Adam became a living being. But that breath did more than just animate a body. It also established an inner life called the soul. And it's the soul that makes us fully human, not merely alive, but aware, relational, reflective, and responsive to God. But I want to go a little bit deeper with this and make this more personal to you and talk about your soul. Your soul is the deepest part of you. Your soul is where your inner world exists. And your soul is the seat of your identity. It's your unique selfhood. It is your sense of me. And your soul carries your personality and your individuality. It carries your story, carries your dreams, carries your memories, and it even carries your wounds. Your soul is the seat of your desires and your longings, your emotional experience, and your relational capacity. It's the place where your fears and your hopes and your questions and even your uncertainties live. It's the part of you that you experience life from the inside. It's where you experience love and loneliness. It's where you wrestle with meaning and how you perceive purpose. And if your soul, it's your soul that quietly is asking these profound questions found within every human being: who am I really? Do I matter? Am I loved? Where do I belong? Am I seen? What is my purpose? Your soul is where you feel deep joy or deep sorrow. And when you say, I feel empty, or I feel overwhelmed, or I feel at peace, you are describing the condition of your soul. You don't just believe God with your intellect. You relate to him with your soul. Pastor Andy talked about this passage just for a moment last week, found in Psalm 42. It says, as the deer pants for streams of water, so my soul pants for you, my God. My soul thirsts for you, for the living God. When can I go and meet with God? At its very core, your soul was created to long for God, to be present with him, to be nourished by him, and to experience its core needs of love, safety, belonging, and rest, and purpose through him. And when your soul is malnourished, it will begin to ache. And if your soul is not turned toward its creator, you will find that it will begin to search for relief in substitutes, comfort in distractions, identity in achievement, validation in approval, relief in entertainment, numbness in substances, worth in performance. This is why the condition of your soul matters so much, because your soul is not just a secondary aspect of your life, it is the core of your life, and hurry is the greatest enemy of a healthy soul. And margin is not about time management alone. It's about recognizing that your inner life, your soul, needs space, attention, and nourishment just as much as your physical body does. And when we fill up our lives with things, with calendar commitments, obligations, when we max out our calendars, hurry becomes the norm. And our soul slowly dies and our lives become unfruitful. Now let me try to make this extremely practical. That might be too much of a word. I have a few questions I want to ask you. I have 100 of them, but I'm only ask you several because, you know, lunch is coming. Do you have time in your schedule to hear God clearly? Or is your life too noisy to discern his voice? Do you have the time and resources to be generous toward others when God points you toward them? Do you have time to disciple your children before they launch out on their own? Time flies. Do you have time to notice what's happening in your child's heart, not just their behavior? Or if you're married, your spouse's heart. Do you have time for that? Are you becoming who God designed you to be or who everyone else expects you to be? Where are you getting your information about your identity? Are you living at peace and at a pace that allows your soul to stay healthy? What's your pace? Simplicity is not about having less or doing less for its own sake. Simplicity creates margin. And margin creates capacity not only to be present with God and to receive his love, but capacity to be present with others and to give his love to them. Three more questions. What is the condition of your soul today? Is there something that you can identify with that might be choking out your ability to receive God's love and give his love to others? Last question, what is one thing that you might be able to do this week to begin creating margin? My encouragement to you is to get some solitude. We talked about this last week. Get some time, get some solitude. Listen to what's going on inside you and start figuring out a way to create some margin. Now, my wife and I, we don't add anything to our calendar without talking to each other first. Because we've been down that path before, and it doesn't work out very well if we just start adding things. We share a calendar, and I'm 100% accurate. She's 99%. But it might be that you, if you're married, you have a conversation with your spouse to talk about this together. Because that's important. Why? Because you need margin. Your kids need margin. What are you teaching your kids about margin? And what this might mean to you is that you might have to say no to something. You might have to sell something. You might have to put that pursuit on pause. You might have to drop an obligation. If you're at the place in your life where you have an appointment coming up on the calendar for something or with somebody, and you're like, leads an hour before, and they're like, sorry, can't make it, and you're like, yeah, go to my house. Maybe you need some more margin. Last story, because I like it. So, I don't know when it was, years ago. My uncle from Texas, however you say that if you're from there, calls me up and says, hey, nephew, I got this 1963 MG Midget, used to belong to your grandpa, do you want it? And I'm like, yes, I do. Of course I want that thing. So I rented a storage unit so I could start accumulating things. And that's a long drive down to Texas. I would never want to live there. But once you're in there, you're never getting out. But I'm down there in Texas, or on the way down to Texas, and my kids are in the back seat of the truck, and they all have headphones on. They got their movies and things and bag of snacks that somehow last 10 minutes. And we're driving down there, and I'm listening to nothing. I just have silence. And brought me back to that time when I was by the creek with the horse, making horse noises. It brought me back to that because those grassy things were blowing around. I'm just like, gosh, you know, Kansas, beautiful. Oh my gosh, Oklahoma, kind of dry looking, but man, the silence was great. And leading up to that point in my life, I was starting to become irritable, upset, short, in a hurry, wanted to isolate, wanted to escape, wanted to numb out. But there was something about that drive that calmed the noise outside so I could listen to what was happening inside. And it was glorious. And I knew at that point, I need to go back home and do something about this. Went to Texas, came back with the car. Favorite part of the trip on the way back is driving with this nice car in the back on the trailer, and this guy throws his thumb up, you know, and I'm like, that's right, got a great car here. Don't know what I'm going to do with it. And I got back and started looking at my calendar, started looking at my budget, started looking at my relationships, and I started to reorganize my life around what was most important. And I had to cut a lot of things out. But let me tell you, it gave me a breath of fresh air. And now sometimes, I have people that this bothers, but like they'll ask a question, you want to plan something in a year from now? And I'm like, not right now, I don't. Because I need to breathe, and I want to make sure that I'm not going to be making a bad decision. I want to be with these people, but it might be something that you might want to look into this week. So let me pray for us as we head out. Lord, thank you so much again for another Sunday, and just for all these amazing people in this church. Lord, I pray that you start to reveal things in each and every single soul in this room that might need some work. Lord, what needs to be removed? What needs to be plucked out so it's not choking people? Lord, let us be in tune to your presence and in tune to what you have for us. In Jesus' name, amen.